Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's 9/11 show. Here we are, health science and energy and 9/11. What do you think? Well, what a day. Sunday, 9/11. Again, September 2011. We will now continue on with our stuff we were doing 2 weeks ago, because I was gone last week. We were down in Tropical Storm Riki in Louisiana. Join that. Here we go.
Okay, we're going to do a little muscle test. What's your name, by the way? Hey. Cool. I'll put your arm out here. Straight out. Okay. Make a fist. Now, when I push down, don't let me. Resist. See how strong you are. Come on, James. Resist. Come on.
Okay.
Resist. Oh, is that it? I'm kind of weak. Okay, hang on a second. Let's make it worse. I know. Neither are the mindless. But here. I know they do. That's what you're doing right now. Okay. So if you're using them, just go ahead and start breathing that glue. It's a good glue. It's got all the skeletons and shit on the front. It's really bad news. But go ahead. Now, make a fist. Now, stick it up in your nose.
Oh, no. I stick that up
in my nose. A little closer. Just trust me. I won't kill you right away. Now, resist. Resist. Is that it? Nothing now, is there? Using one finger. Okay, relax. There goes the glue all over your sock. Now, you walk around your house tonight, and your house will be an amazing order. Put that on now. This is really cool. I like doing this.
Oh, I like this. Is what I got.
You don't even know what it is. Now breathe the glue.
Breathe the glue?
Yeah. Put your arm back out. Make a fist. Now resist. Let's see what you can do. No. Keep it that same way. Now resist. 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 That's it. Resist. That's very good. That's very good. Hey, what an improvement. Did you like that?
Well, I got a little power from somewhere.
I like a point blank statement. You know,
I don't
that's kind of.
Where did it come from? But I was.
It came from you. You're just so used to having the shit locked up inside of you. Mm-hmm. Just get a chance to express yourself. You don't have no idea where you're coming from. You're used to it. It's better than being in the hospital. All right, thanks, James.
What is that?
It's called a nuclear receptor.
Can I buy one of these?
Yeah, you can get those.
How much is it?
Oh, that's a lot. Go sit down. I'll tell you about it. Thanks. Let me tell you something. I've been a doctor for a while, and he was a mess. We fixed him up, but we tuned him real quick. Most people are like an instrument out of tune, though. It's really true. It's amazing, you know, what goes on. You guys have any questions out there before they kick me out? I've gone my 30 minutes. Any questions you must have? Do what? Oh, you want to channel into an entity, your higher self, to give you an idea that you already have? That's what it is. It's no problem. You have to, what? Yeah, hang on. It's real quick.
Well, that ended that. So that was fun. So now we'll go to something new. Of course, we've always got something ready to go. That was a muscle testing, and it was a little fun. I think, if I remember correctly, that guy was not doing too well, but he realized after the muscle test he wasn't doing too well. So anyway, let's see here. Let me see here. Let's try this one. This little puppy should be ready to go, Dr. Bell.
So we found that pyramids
there we go.
In all directions with the tops of them, the apex is tied together to the apex of every other one. So there's a wire suspension system with inside this device.
We're describing a pyramid, how it works now.
To be drawn in and neutralized. And so we put that in conjunction with wherever we had a solar orb or wherever we had a septagrid in a room, we would always put a star orb in the opposite end of the house in that structure. And the star orb would run, we would run a stainless steel wire from the star orb into the ground. And this would cause the negativity to go back into the earth. So
it's
any
very
negative
important
energy
for
that were drawn out of a person
days.
Or an environment would be put back into the earth. And then realize that energy cannot be created or destroyed, but it can be transmuted. So what was happening is this device is acting as a rectifier. Strangely enough, one of the large devices, the great big one, because of its neutralizing characteristics, ended up in a film, one of the James Bond films used one of my devices, a film called Moonraker, if you remember that one. And the device was, if you remember the film, it was when James Bond was captured by the the bad guy, and they were on the space station out in space, and they showed him this cloaking device that made the space station become invisible to radar because it had this neutralizing characteristic. And Pinewood Studios has used a lot of my devices over the period of years. I think the people over there, the artists and the producers, use them in their offices or whatever, so they end up writing them into their film. So this device was actually pictured in the James Bond film Moonraker as a neutralizing device. And so that device, it gained its fame in a lot of areas, and typically medical clinics and would put them in, dental offices would put them in, and the first way that they would be used would be, they would be placed in the lobbies, and they would be suspended, usually with plants, because they are a very attractive looking structure, and nobody was telling anybody what they were for. As far as the people coming in were concerned, they were just a piece of gold and pyramid-shaped form of artwork, because the theories are too far advanced for most people on this planet at this time. So they in turn would just look at this thing and they would feel good looking at it, not knowing why. And this, of course, would release apprehension. We also used them in some chiropractors' clinics in the lobbies, so that what would happen is when the chiropractor would need to adjust a person, instead of having to bring them in and get all the street tension off of them, that means they set you in a room for 10 or 15 minutes, you sit there by yourself, and then they put you up on the bed, and then they let you lay another 5 minutes, and then they make the adjustments. That might be 20 minutes in the room before you get maybe 45 seconds worth of adjustments. What the chiropractor here is doing is getting rid of what's called street tension, and this is all the apprehension of coming in for the medical treatment and all these kinds of things, based upon, you know, the lack of the familiarity because of the way we conduct ourselves on the street in our daily lives. So by putting these devices in the lobbies, they were able to cut this period of street tension release down to about 75%. So this then meant, from a dollar standpoint, the chiropractor's volume could go up. He could see more patients, but it also meant for the patient a better, more relaxed series of adjustments, a better response to the chiropractor's work. So these are the kinds of devices that over a period of years we began to bring to the marketplace, which led us up into the newer technology, which we'll talk about sometime in the future. And I'll be putting together some pamphlets on the newer technology. But right now, I feel important for all the listeners out there just to become familiar with things that have been around for over 10 years now from our production lines. And most people aren't even aware of them. This is like brand new, so we've got to really concentrate on these kinds of things. Now, the other, getting back just to the simple pyramids themselves again, we talked about the fire dome and the ray dome and the pyridome. A lot of people wonder exactly how these things work on the body. In other words, why does one pyramid have one effect on the body and one other pyramid have another effect on the body? And the answer is fairly simple. If you realize that our body has seven different sets of endocrine centers, or endocrine glands, and these glands each have about seven different sets of hormones in them, and the glands are like capillaries, and a capillary is a type of gland that will release its hormones or open its walls up to let things pass through its membrane when it is in a relaxed state. It has to be relaxed. And the only thing that will cause the capillary to relax will be a lowering of the electrical pressures that are causing it to remain rigid, because the capillary on one level is a muscle. So you have to control the muscular contractions and expansions of these muscle walls that form these capillaries in order for them to release or secrete their hormones out into the body, which then the blood will carry them eventually up into the blood-brain barrier, where they will have an effect on consciousness. Jim probably remembers at the seminar that we had a while back where I went into great detail about how the hormones are actually formed from food substances. And when you form a hormone, for example, you take vasopressin. Vasopressin is a hormone stored in the pituitary body, and when it's secreted into the brain, it causes the brain to change its switching speeds, and when that happens, it causes you to become mentally inclined. Your mental capacity begins to enhance itself, and you begin to get motivated to do things on a mental level. Unfortunately, pollutants like smog, primarily smog, vastly depletes the supplies of lysine and arginine in the body that are converted over to vasopressin, and as a result of that, even if you were to get the popular stimulus in the pituitary region, one of which being is negative ionization, oftentimes the hormone reservoir is depleted, in the vasopressin because of the depletion of the smog in their environment. That's why in the formulas, for example, like Excalibur, we put larger amounts of lysine and arginine in them and encourage people to take this formula on an empty stomach, because this helps, you know, by that manner, mental clarity to happen when you're ready to think about things and concentrate on things. So the endocrine system works several ways, but one way that it works is by vibration. And the endocrine glands are basically capillaries, and these capillaries rely on vibrations of the proper nature, the one that's tuned to their particular cavity or size that these endocrines are composed of, for the releasing of the hormones. And then, of course, the capillary does not release a hormone directly like a pipe into the bloodstream. It has to go by osmosis, whereby the membrane layers relax and the hormones flow out of the capillaries into the body and are picked up at the proper points by the bloodstream. So the endocrine gland system is oftentimes called the ductless gland system. And we have seven different glands in the body, starting from the head centers and going down into the base of the spine, which the base of the spine is the lowest center in the body, the sexual center, reproduction energy part. Now, what has happened is, if you study the effects of consciousness in our body, all consciousness on one level only manifests itself or works or releases itself into our lives when we are in a state of balance and relaxation. And consciousness is a thing that grows, because we as people, we as beings of energy in the universe, experience growth by harmony or disharmony within our own spheres. And when our spheres, our world, like my world, interfaces with another person like Jim's or the listeners out there, when our worlds interface, this causes an expansion or growth because of the encounter of the energies coming across each other. So this then causes more experiences to happen. And as the population of the planet gets larger, as there are more and more people having experiences, where like there's many, many, many more people living today than there were, say, 100 or 200 years ago on the surface of the Earth. So as this happens, consciousness is said to expand, and we reach out, we explore, we move on. For example, a few hundred years ago, we left Plymouth, Massachusetts, we left England and arrived in Plymouth, Massachusetts. This was a growth factor of expansion. Now we're going to the moon. Soon we'll be going to the stars. This type of expansion brings new technologies, new science. Well, along the way, spirit allows our bodies to change through the actions of science on our body. And along the way, we began to cause some problems that it affected our growth rate. So as an alternative, people began to turn to different things to try to escape, Religion was enhanced, drugs were enhanced, many things became escape methods, when this really wasn't the answer. The answer was to look within, focus within, and find out from within how we could bring about balance and harmony again. Now, if you look at science fiction, like in the earlier days, in the 40s, for example, science fiction portrayed as an ultimate step, man going to the moon. Today, a science fact is that man has been to the moon. This kind of thing. Now we're looking at science fiction again as, producing the ultimate human being, bionic man, bionic woman, superwoman, all these kinds of things being portrayed, and even adults and children alike getting into this nature. Well, then you hear about the altered states that are taking place in a few individuals, people walking on hot coals, people bending metal with their minds, clairvoyance, working for police departments, touching a piece of material that was from a person that disappeared, and then the person clairvoyantly saying where that disappeared person has gone to. Those kinds of things. These are expanded states of consciousness, which a few individuals today are able to exhibit and demonstrate and share with the world. Unfortunately, for most people, we're still having a problem existing in society and existing within our own natures.
Dr. Bell?
Yes.
I have a question concerning that.
Okay.
How do we know that we're evolving towards that? Instead of, isn't it possible that those are abilities that we had to help us survive during the evolutionary process, and now those are kind of like the appendix, in fact? It is de-evolving. Devolving, I guess the word would be.
Well, you can see that we're evolving in that way, because the earth is primarily fourth kingdom now. You know, first kingdom mineral, second kingdom vegetable, third kingdom animal, fourth kingdom human, fifth kingdom is spiritual, you know, going in towards other dimensions, for example. Having the consciousness or awareness to have an understanding that we are multifaceted beings, that's the trend. The certain individuals, for example, that have had that experience became the gurus. And there were many, many people within their own nature that were seeking this, or the gurus would have had no followers. So the evidence could be said in one way that new religions, new followers, new gurus, new leaders of different types became, you know, involved and became publicly noticeable, and more of these cults or sects began to form. Did you follow from that point of view?
Yes. I still don't think that's strong evidence, though, that it's not atavistic in nature. It's not an atavism, a throwback, in a way, to an old culture. But certainly we can hope that it's not,
well,
that we are progressing.
Well, you can say it's a throwback to an old culture. For example, during the Atlantean times, 12,000 years ago, when Poseidon existed as the capital of Atlantis off the coast of Florida,
Okay,
the superstition then was people were so superstitious, and this could be looked at as a throwback, if you will. They were so superstitious that what happened was they began, you know, materialization in Atlantean times was easy. I mean, many people could do it. Vision into other dimensions was much easier then than it is now. However, the priesthood of that time began to misuse it, and there was not enough experience. The culture at that point did not have enough physical plane or physical manifestation experience to be solid in the grounds that they were in, and they began to lose their centers, which allowed things to happen that couldn't happen today because we're more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me from a superstitious point of view?
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're supposed to take a synthesis and be able to become inter- and multiple-dimensional beings as well as physical beings. That is the synthesis of today. And our bodies, then, will produce hormones that, when these go into the bloodstream, will cause these kinds of changes to become natural for us. You follow?
Yes, sir.
But what happens is, and what is happening is, because of pollution and distortion, when the body seeks to make these changes, it only gets a barrage of negativity and negative energies from pollution, and this then causes psychotic diseases and especially sexual, tremendous sexual inversion on a spiritual principle, which leads into homosexuality. You know, this is one area that's becoming quite apparent. Not saying that's good or bad, but just saying that's a fact, and that's what's happening, and that movement is spreading right now because of an inversion on certain spiritual principles, which does not allow people to properly synthesize the law of opposites, you know, the law of polar opposites, in this, in one case, being male-female energy. A quick example of us moving into interdimensional or multidimensional lifestyles is the movie that just came out called The Philadelphia Experiment. Have you seen that one yet?
No, I'm familiar with the book by Charles Berlitz, is it not?
Right, right. I have a copy of it here that he autographed for me, as a matter of fact, and met him at a conference once. But what they've done now is they've made a who knows whether it's true or not, but what they've done is they've made a movie out of one of the men that disappeared, what could have happened to the lives of one of the men that disappeared.
Dr. Bell, I think we should give a brief synopsis of the story. And basically, if I remember the story correctly, it was about a dematerialization of an entire battleship.
Right. What it was, the cruiser. What happened was, in 1943, the U.S. Navy, see, in the old days, they had these minesweepers. And a minesweeper was a semi, it's like John Wing used to own one of those. That was just, he converted over to a pleasure boat. The minesweeper was a semi-wooden ship that had a large magnetic apparatus in the entire bottom section of the thing throughout the entire the keel. And what this did was detected mines, and it didn't set the mine off because the metal of the ship would set the mine off, and the wooden ship would not go off, and the detector would then disarm, you know, pick up on the mine, disarm it, and then it would say for a fleet to come, okay, because people in World War II, the Germans used to set up these mines. Well, what the Navy began to do in about 1939, and they were working, even, matter of fact, the old cohort of mine, Werner von Braun, was involved in this project, they began to develop equipment that would make ships invisible to mines, meaning that they could run right across one of these mines and it wouldn't even go off, so that would eliminate the need for a minesweeper. That led into an experiment, which about 1943, was, they played with it in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. That's why they call it the Philadelphia experiment. But that led into a situation whereby they were trying to make ships' radar invisible. In other words, invisible to enemy radar. And the actual experiment was performed in the Philadelphia harbor, whereby the ship, with a special electronic apparatus, put up a screen to become invisible to radar. And what happened is, during the experiment, the whole ship became invisible. And they didn't know that it was going to become invisible. And it fell into a time warp. And when it returned from the time warp, it briefly materialized in a Navy in a New Jersey shipyard, and then came back again in Philadelphia. But when it returned in Philadelphia, and by the way, when it disappeared, it went into this kind of a greenish haze. And when it returned, some of the crew members had disappeared. They never returned with the ship. Some of them were actually embedded in the ship itself. I mean, it was a whole thing that has to do with time travel. When you dematerialize and rematerialize something, things change if things aren't held in equilibrium. And the film went on to show the story of how a guy fell off jumped over the ship and ended up in an experiment in 1984 in the desert in Nevada, where the Navy was then trying another kind of dematerialization experiment. And that was the basis of the film. The fact is that we do live in a multi-dimensional universe, and right next door are other universes, parallel universes. It's a good discipline for people to try. If they really want to know, for example, the negative effects of electricity going through wires and incandescent lighting, okay? If you were to have in your home an evening where you just use candlelight and use no electrical lights at all, the entire feeling that you'll have in your house during the time that the candles are burning versus if you had electrical lights of any nature on is entirely different. Have you ever tried that?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact.
Really?
No, never have.
You should try it sometime. Just reading a book, for example, if you sit down and burn two or three of those long, thin candles and read a book, you'll find that reading by candlelight will cause your assimilative and intuitive powers to be much higher during the period of time that you're reading the book versus if you had a regular light on. You can just try it. It's amazing. I do a lot of reading at night by candlelight in a small little study that I have, because I've found that I can assimilate a whole lot more. In the brain, see, what people don't realize is that these other dimensions of energy that exist throughout the universe are very harmonious. Until we disturb them, they're pretty much balanced. It's like if you were to leave a field alone, plants would grow, weeds would grow, whatever would grow, it would grow. It would be growth there. But when we start plowing it and distorting it, it changes. The changes happen. We start putting fertilizers on it, the soil erodes. We start putting insecticides on it, and what happens is we damage the genetic characteristics of the soil so that we get plants, you know, like corn, things like that. They don't taste properly anymore. The same thing exists with energy fields. Energy fields are very, very subject to thought. And as a matter of fact, in modern physics now, they're finally starting to realize that the experiment and the experimenter are one and the same. And, like, you can take the same experiment with a group of scientists, each one performing the same experiment, and if you had 12 people doing the same experiment, chances are you'd probably get 8 to 10 different results from the same experiment, because it all comes from a point of observation, a point of background, you know.
Now, Dr. Bell, hasn't that been found primarily on the quantum level, but not so much on the everyday level?
Even on the everyday level, what will happen is the personality will enter into it. It's amazing. I remember back from my physics and chemistry classes that the differences that people would get. You know, it's like if everybody puts salt, you know, if you take a glass of water and put salt in it, for example, everybody might say it was salty. But you'd be surprised. Somebody will say it tastes like metal, you know. Even in a simple experiment like that, you'll get some deviation, which there's nothing wrong with that, because the essence of the universe comes from our individual, God-given individuality you know, interpreting these different essences of these different energies, you know. That is what we were God-given in our freedom to be individual beings. But what happens is, in the energy fields that run parallel to our universe, we introduce distortions. For example, when we explode an atomic bomb, or a hydrogen bomb, or a nuclear warhead, this has consequences in other dimensions. It's like creating something that is not supposed to be there, and these consequences have long-term effects on our consciousness. Man is basically, you know, harnessing science to match his ego and coming up with a factor of brute force. And so what happens is this causes a disharmonious in the ethers. And so you can just start, like I was explaining earlier, with a light and reading by candlelight, and you'll find that things are peaceful. The idea to reach tranquility and to reach into yourself, to make your memory work, to recall upon the past, we need to go into a very tranquil, very quiet, very relaxed state. And when we do experimentation, for example, in multidimensional experiments, the environment is the most important thing. It almost, you might say, the environment would have to be sanctified, you know. It's like in churches, when you go into a church, there's a very pure feeling oftentimes there because it's sanctified for the feeling of God that they've created in this church. The same thing in science, when you're dealing with energy, you have to sanctify the area for this.
I guess that ended that one. I don't know if there's anything on the other side or not. I'm not sure. So we'll let that puppy flip. It seemed like that show wasn't recorded the way we normally record them. So I'll just give it a chance to flip over. See where it ends up after that. Because we got another goodie ready to go. Oh, come on here. We'll just fast forward that puppy right down to the end. Yes, sir. That was a pretty good discussion talking about the sanctity of a graveyard. Yeah, that's a different energy. We used to fire a sound across places like that and then pick up on the sound and record it into our mixes. It's kind of a subtle way of getting the energy. Of course, the graveyards wasn't exactly our targets. We like spiritual Indian grounds better and volcanoes and all that sort of thing. Looks like that is the end of that one. So we will now get a new Dr. Fred Bell out. Yes, we will. Okay. Expo where we're going in another month or so. And play we do. Should be coming right up. Oh, yeah. This is fun. Waiting for Dr. Bell to appear.
This is what.
There he is.
I'll give you a little background here on some stuff. This is when I worked at NASA, I used to build these things, all right? This is one that we built. This was that's called a rocket ship, and that's the second stage of a Saturn rocket to lift the Apollo off the ground. And I worked on the Apollo, which is another division of NASA. It was Space and Information Division at Rockwell. And then I used to sit in all the Apollos at night. It was fun. To switch all the switches and play astronaut, you know. Those things didn't have much room in them. This is what lifted the ship off the ground. I mean, this is the second stage. The first stage was built over at Rocketdyne at Santa Susana with an F1 engine, had 5 million pounds of thrust, 5 engines.
Do you have a microphone?
I got what I got here. I don't know. There's one over there, maybe. And Okay. Now, those of you probably know that I was a contactee. I have some interesting pictures here that I'll share with you as we start out. This was over in Laguna Beach. And this is an old car that I had. It was a Corvette. Let me get it, Mike. These wires. I like wireless. Get this thing. Maybe it'll work. Yeah, this is hot. That's what you want, right? You guys don't want to hear me, do you? This is worse than my recording sessions. Grief. Okay. This was an interesting picture because when my Pleiadian contacts stopped in 1989 after 22 years, I wasn't really into any more contact stuff. I'd had enough of it. I know a lot of people would love to be a contactee. To me, it was just another form of interference. But I guess it was necessary. So I was having a contact one morning with gum on the table here. A contact one morning with Liara. She was from the Andromeda. Andromedans are the ones that brought us the holographic projector and those different kinds of systems that we have now downstairs on the booth. All the new stuff. And this is back a ways. This is an old Corvette I had. And we're up on a government place in Laguna Beach. We live on one hill. And then there's another hill about 2 or 3 miles away that the government sort of took over and put a ton of antennas up. And they load the radiation that we get off of that place is ridiculous. I had to develop a device called a flamethrower just to keep the radiation out of the house. So anyway, this morning I'm going out, and Liara says to me, bring your camera, because just at the very end of the Pleiadian contact, because Billy Myers wasn't very communicated with his pictures, I decided to take my own pictures, and so I started doing that. And in this particular day, I was not really feeling like a photo session, so I just grabbed a Polaroid. I didn't think much was going to happen. So I got in the car and drove up, and you can see the sun shining right here, right down on there, and right down on there. That's one of the fenders sticking up in that picture. Then, the next one, the ship is coming in right here. The sun is still there and reflecting the same, and here comes an Andromedan ship right there. That's a disc. And then in the next picture, it came right over in front. Hello. There it is. There it is right there. Okay, that's an Andromedan ship. And the lady that flew that, her name is Liara. And she was my contact lady up until the present. And you can still see the sun over here shining there on the steering wheel. And the sun right up here shining also on the right fender. So that was interesting, that little contact we had there. If I'd had a better camera, I'd have got a better picture, but I wasn't in the mood to do photos that day. I guess I was too moody, who knows. Let's see, after that same spot, about a week later, I went up at night to do a photo session. And this sign just suddenly was put up. Basically, no trespassing. We will use special force. It's like Area 51 by my house. The sign is still there. So this is typically what would happen, you know, in the different areas where I would have contact. Once I'd have 2 or 3 contacts there, signs like this appeared, and I'd be kicked out, right? This was El Morro Bay, earlier with a 35-millimeter camera when she came down. And right up there is the ship. Now it's 35-millimeter. It's a distance. That's the ocean right there. It's out at a distance. And the next picture, right here, is that the right one? I think so, yeah. The ship came up from the horizon, and there you can see it. Interesting thing, it's kind of a phallic-looking ship. As you can see, it has a very high dome on the top of a disk, and that's a typical characteristic of this type of Andromedan ship. Their mother ships are quite a bit larger, typically a mile or so across. I have a website called www.raysoftruth.tv. It's in the flyers. On there I have some recent NASA photographs taken from the space shuttle. I think it was STS-117 or 116 mission. And looking down on the Earth, and a 10-mile-long streamer had been cut loose from the spaceship, from the new space station they're building. And so it had gone down. It gradually was floating down towards the Earth. It wasn't gravity. It was just floating that way. And on this video on the raysoftruth.tv website, you'll see about 50 Andromedan motherships, each about a mile across, and they're very clear. Then I have another little, as I worked for NASA, it was always never a straight answer. Okay, that's what NASA means, never a straight answer. And all the retired astronauts now are all freaking out because they won't talk about this stuff anymore. So anyhow, I have another video on that website where a NASA official is trying to explain what these mile across 50 or so motherships are. And you really have to see that explanation that he puts up. It's on the video, so that you can have yourself one heck of a laugh. Because when you realize how these government administrative officials talk down to the world, it's like there is a need for assassins on this planet. Sometimes, okay? Yeah. It's ridiculous. It is a joke. Now, since I've been here, I did some remote viewing for an agency. First was December 18th, 2000. Let's see, 2001, right after the World Trade Center was false flagged. And they wanted me to track bin Laden. Okay, so I tracked bin Laden for them. He left Tora Bora and went up through what's called the Hindustani Mountains up into a place called the Dushanbe right after, you know, the World Trade Center thing. And he stayed in Dushanbe for a while. And Dushanbe is an interesting town. It's a drug dealer's town. It's an old 2,000-year-old heroin run. So no CIA or NSA people could get up in there because everybody in the drug trade over 2,000 years old knows everybody else. So then I tracked him up across into the Gobi Desert. He went up to the Gobi Sea, crossed the Gobi Sea into a remote part of China, and went underwent healing, acupuncture. I drew a picture of the building that he was in, the temple that he was in. I drew a picture of the room that he was in and the fireplace next to his bed and gave it to the proper people and the intelligence to use this kind of stuff. After that, he stayed there for 3 months, and in March the following year, he went up to Laos. In Laos, you know, it's like a salesman goes out and deals with his reps. The reps get active in that territory when the sales manager shows up. So while he was in Laos, he orchestrated, if you look at your geography, you'll see that the Philippines are right below there, straight down on the ocean. And if you look at March, the year after the following spring, you'll see there was a lot of terrorist activity down in the Philippines. So as time went on, I was asked to do another thing, and that was I had actually done some training with some people, and I taught them how to what we call street tracking, where if we're going after someone, right down the highway, just like the Indians track, you know, an animal or a wounded something or other through the brush, I taught some agencies how to track on the street. And I had a group working for me. It was called Task Force 20. And they tracked, this was during the second Iraq invasion, we tracked the owner of a building in Fallujah into Syria and arrested him. They interrogated him and they found out where Uday and Qusay was. And so as a result of this tracking exercise, Uday and Cousset had a little bit of an encounter, which I'm sure you've heard of. They were blown to bits, but they were offered a chance to surrender, and I think this was screwing up because it's not gotten the power properly. And that was a real interesting experience. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I got involved with, well, since I've been here. Then they offered me a job at the farm training people, and I said, no. I said, paradigm to me is a lot more important than paradigm's a lot more important than doing what I used to do 35, 40 years ago. So that's kind of some of the stuff I was into. Then I got a call from what I call the evil one's office, Dick Cheney, and they congratulated me for my efforts, in which case they offered me a job at the farm. The farm is in Virginia, training people, and I passed on that. So even though I don't do this anymore, I did do a little bit of it again for a little while. And that's some of the stuff I've been doing. Okay. Also, we have been, make sure this is on now, low battery thing, go away. I got to get a battery for this computer. I've been developing a lot of new stuff. Okay. And one of the new things that we developed, which I've been wearing, I took it off from the show, it was detoxing me a little fast, was that chrysalidome I had on. And I wanted to explain something about these pyramids that we have, because I'm finding them quite necessary to be used again, to be brought back into the, you know, auspices of our society. Even though, you know, you got to remember something about Paradigm. We started this company, the way we started was back in 1974, basically. And I had working with a Dr. Gary Couture in Newport Beach, California. And in the process of working with him, he asked me, I was actually employed by a pyramid company called Pyramid Power 5, and I went over there because I didn't know what to do with myself after having been a rocket scientist, having had a big corporation selling equipment to classified places. Like, I had 3,000 different clients that I called on all over the United States for many years. After having this crazy life, I just didn't want any more to do with it. I was done. And so I went to work for Pyramid Power 5, and we had a pyramid science kit. And it consisted of a little red box with a wooden pyramid in it that you assembled. It had a compass, and it had two little plastic things, little tanks, that you would put brine shrimp in. And one group of brine shrimp went under this little pyramid, which was aligned to the north with a compass, and it proceeded to live on forever. And the other group of shrimp was put in a 10 or 20 feet away from this little wooden pyramid, and they would all die to 6 to 8 weeks. They'd hatch, there were little eggs, they'd hatch, little shrimp would fly around, you know, swim around and die. That's where all this started, okay? It all started there. The only thing I knew about pyramids in those days is there was one in Egypt, and maybe some king had built it. I didn't know anything about this stuff. It was all brand new. So some other people were more advanced than I was, and I was marketing these kits to these big May Company and Macy's and all of that. And a doctor came up to me and he said, we did some testing for the pyramid, kinesiology on the human body, and we found that when we lay somebody flat and put their arms up and use John Thies' method of looking for nutritional imbalances, that anywhere we put this pyramid, if it's aligned to the north, on this person, they don't have a nutritional imbalance. They have a full balanced system. We don't know why this works, so we need a pyramid that's, on, you know, we don't have to line it up anymore. So I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And I went into metals. We were making a zinc-coated metal pyramid at Pyramid Power 5. And I started looking at molecular structures of stuff, and I realized that gold was an octahedron. No wonder everybody loves it, and it's a pyramid, all the molecules. So I coated a pyramid with gold, 24-karat gold, which I still do today. And that produced our first product, a pyridome. That went to a clinic in Newport Beach. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't have my degree in homeopathic medicine at all then. I knew what vitamins were. That was about it. And Gary started putting them on everybody's heads. And that's how they started going on the head. You know, I didn't do it. Somebody else did it. And pretty much the whole history of this company has been predicated on other people's experiences on things that I've developed or co-developed, okay? And what happened in those days, the market for that product was the Valium-Matic, which was the American housewife back in the early 70s. Taking people off of Valium was quite a job. A lot of them would die. It's a pretty rugged drug when you've been taking as much as they took to get the, you know, the calming that they were supposed to get, and then the anger that followed, so they had to get off of it. So that's how the whole thing started. A little later on, Gary came to me and he said, you know, these bracelets are over in Japan, and they seem to do something with arthritis. And arthritis is a low-frequency bone disorder in the center of the bones where blood is produced in the first place. He says, why don't you take a pyramid and put copper on it, and we'll have an arthritis, you know, answer. So I said, fine. So I took a gold pyramid, I put copper on it, took it to him, and proceeded to check it out, and guess what? It didn't work. It didn't do a darn thing. It didn't even do the other pyramid thing anymore. It was ruined. So I don't know why it didn't work. No idea. And I made 100 of them. So I took the 100 of them and stuck them in a corner of my house, stored them, because in those days we operated out of a garage, and let them sit for about 6 to 8 weeks. After 6 to 8 weeks, I saw these little, look like freckles. All these copper-plated pyramids had freckles all over them. And what had happened is the orgone effect, which I know now, didn't know then, hindsight's great in this business, had made little holes that had actually dissolved the plating on the structure of the pyramid. So I took one of these freckled pyramids down to Gary, and I said, test it now and see what it does. And he tested it, and he says, not only does this stuff strong, it's much stronger than the gold one they used to make. And so that became the beginning of the plating process. We went another level, and I finally figured out that metals do have a vibratory effect on the body, certain metals. So I wanted to put a white metal over the copper, okay, and do the same thing. And I decided to try rhodium, platinum. I tried every white metal I get my hands on. Finally, one of the platers suggested, why don't you just try silver? It's the simplest one. So I put silver on, and we came up with a product that was known as the radome. Well, meanwhile, we have to set these things in huge piles, you know, and wait forever, and that was like the curing process. Well, that wasn't working. So one night I was standing over the stove holding the thing, one of the pyramids, and I dropped it into the stove, one of the ones that just been plated, and I noticed that when it got in the flame, it made a rainbow effect across the plating surface. And so that became our heat process. We no longer had to pickle the pyramids. We could now have a heat process. And we began to do that. Later on, and this was verified by Dr. Emoto, we wanted to change the base metal of the pyramids. It was plated with exotic metals, but now we wanted to change the base metal. So we went to titanium. And the reason we went to titanium is I was doing my string theory studies at that time and realized that titanium had the same molecular structure as the Pope blessing water. This was later triple verified by Dr. Emoto in Japan when he would take water and put hate vibes into it and put love vibes into it, and then he'd have somebody bless it, and then freeze it and look at the molecular structure, and the blessing of the water looked exactly, once again, like the titanium structure. So that became the power dome. And we used those, we made those for, I don't know, up from 1979 up until about a year ago. Finally, we began to develop a new one that became known as the Chrysalidome. And it was based on studies that I had done back with Lawrence Kennedy and Uri Geller when we were doing spoon bending and teaching people how to manipulate metal with their minds and levitate things, that we made. We took some Virginia Beach sand, because Edgar Cayce said that Virginia Beach sand in your present had psychoactive properties and allowed people to enhance their clairvoyant properties by quite a bit. So we took a pyramid years ago and we plated it. We covered one of our power domes with Virginia Beach sand, and it worked incredibly well. Finally, we decided to take it to another level, and it took a while to develop the process. We took the power dome to a level, and we coated it with diamonds. And now that's our new product, our newest thing. It's called the Chrysalidome. It's completely like nothing you've ever experienced until you put it on. That's the new. That's the evolution of an amazing thing. It's brand new. And I guarantee you, it's one fun product. Now, this is very important, what I find, especially in our society today, with the problem of all of these Tamiflu, Effexor, all of these drugs that are being put out right now. If you've taken those, you have a lasting dose of angel dust in your system because they're made up of piperidine, cyclohexane, cyclohexene. Yeah. Pretty much all of them. All prescriptions. Okay. What these do is they, just as alcohol will give you a temporary numbing of the brain for a period of time, these new psychoactive, and most of them are made, the ingredients come from a company called Searle, which of course is run by Donald Rumsfeld. That's what he's doing now, since he's not, you know, defense anymore. He's making drugs so he can kill you guys. And the drugs work the same way as alcohol. You sit down, you drink alcohol, you know, a small amount, and you feel on top of the world, and you can go home, and you know you shouldn't drink anymore. But pretty soon you are drinking more, and you go home, and you get arrested for a DUI, and you sat down, and you knew darn well, and you're not even an alcoholic. You shouldn't have that second glass of wine, because that led to the third. Well, these drugs do the same thing. They work on the same exact parts of the brain as alcohol, except it's a permanent freeze. Okay? And as a result, if you remember people being arrested on angel dust, they have superhuman strength, right? Because you're able to focus all of your energy into the muscular system, and it's complete direct contact of the chi force, temporarily drug-induced. So what happens is now, when you look at the side effects that are printed on the labels, you know, the little paper that comes with it, of Effexor and Xanax and Vicodin and all these other drugs, a lot of them have what's called homicidal ideation as a side effect. Okay? It's pretty common. That means that after you've taken this long enough, you're not going to be brave and do it, get yourself a DUI. You're going to get brave and you're going to kill yourself and you're going to take somebody with you. Okay? And that's what we see in our society. Or you're going to drown your kids, all right, like Andrea Yates did. Not only have I worked in the drug industry against this, I worked with a lady named Dr. Ann Tracy, who was testified in the Andrea Yates trial. She was at Columbine. You know, I was at Columbine. I had Mark Taylor on my show, my radio show. He was shot by Eric Harris 12 times. I've been into the school systems, and I've seen this, and I've worked with people on these drugs. And what happens is, if you don't get off of them, it's a permanent destruction, and you will do something stupid eventually. To make sure, now there's two kinds of drinkers of alcohol. There's one that's a happy drunk, right? There's the other one that's very vindictive and destructive and dangerous, okay? Well, the same thing with these drugs. There's persons that are probably going to be somewhat domicile on them, and some of you are going to get pretty aggressive. But what they do now, what is done now, is with the use of special spy satellites, once you're on the drug program, thoroughly defense ministers get the relationship, they start putting out what we call reptilian frequencies to make sure that you'll become homicidal and suicidal. Okay? A little assurance. And that's how these drugs work. And if you think I'm kidding, prove me wrong. Because all you're going to do, talk to the experts that really are new age and doctors and PhDs, and you're going to find I'm 100% right, not even missing a beat on this one. And it's getting worse. And so when these dastardly acts take place, then what happens is, well, they arrest people, put them in jail, and there goes some more constitutional freedom, right? It's just a form of fascism. It's what Hitler did, what Mussolini did, what Stalin did. It's happening now. Read Naomi Wolf's book. She's a Rhodes Scholar. She ran Clinton's campaign when he ran for president. Very smart lady. I'm going to have her on my show. The End of America. It's out there, okay? So, first thing you got to do, if you've taken any of this stuff, you got to get it out of your system, all right? That's why we need the crystallodome, because these other stuff I made wasn't strong enough, because when these drugs go into your brain, they don't come out. You can go on all the fasts you want, and it's not going to do a bit of good, okay? There's only one way to do it, and that's to use what we call a force of energy, a very powerful force of energy, and make that whole system vibrate, and it's a quantum field that has to be produced at the site of the chemical. And that quantum field has to dissolve that and send that particle on the way and restore the brain to normalcy. Okay? Very important to understand this stuff. Now,
well, we've come to the end of the 55 allotted minutes, so we will continue this discussion next week. And once again, this is 9/11, interesting day.